Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm proud to say this is our 350th broadcast of the Forum on World-Class IT. I hope you've enjoyed our podcast as much as we've enjoyed putting it together across the past decade. To mark the occasion, I have a guest who has gone from CIO to venture capitalist and board member to startups and Fortune 500 companies alike. I'm referring to Gary Reiner. Gary's an operating partner and part of the resources group at General Atlantic, a global growth equity firm that has over $20 billion in assets under management. As an operating partner, Gary's responsible for providing strategic support and advice to the firm's investment teams and portfolio companies with a focus on strategy and technology. Prior to joining General Atlantic, Gary was the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer at General Electric, where he led the mergers and acquisitions, sourcing, IT operations, and quality teams. Prior to joining GE, Gary was a partner at the Boston Consulting Group. Gary received both his Bachelor of Arts degree in economics as well as his MBA from Harvard University. Gary currently serves on the boards of Citigroup, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, Box, Mu Sigma, and Turbonomic, among other companies. I recently caught up with Gary by phone in his office in New York, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 2, infrastructure, as Gary discussed how older companies must modernize their technology infrastructure to compete with younger companies. We also discussed the evolution of the CIO role, the benefits and challenges of machine learning, the perspective Gary gains from serving on multiple boards, among a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by TopTal. TopTal helps organizations achieve the world-class skill, execution speed, and agility they need to win in an environment of increasing innovation and competition, especially in the realm of talent. Blockchain is a topic of increasing relevance to companies, and chief information officers need to develop a talent pipeline to help implement a blockchain strategy. I recently caught up with TopTal's CEO, Tasser Duval, who offered his top five thoughts on obtaining blockchain talent.
First, when hiring blockchain talent, don't focus too much on specific experience, especially since the tools of the trade are changing rapidly. Instead, hire people with a strong baseline knowledge of development and who have experience with cryptography or distributed systems. Second, look for developers who are enthusiastic about the technology. That enthusiasm will provide motivation for them to stay up to date on best practices and innovations in technology. Third, focus on quality of previous development work and attention to detail. Faulty development work can cost a lot in the long term, especially with blockchain implementations. Fourth, ensure you're peer reviewing the talent that comes into the network or that comes into your organization through other experts so that you're ensuring their blockchain knowledge is up to speed with your expectations. And fifth, ensure that when you're providing a management framework for the developer to work within, it's one that considers blockchain at its core, ensuring that the developer is not only working with best software practices, but also best blockchain practices is very important.
The Forum on World-Class IT is also brought to you by Transmit Security. Transmit Security designs and develops platforms that address problems in security and usability by making it easy for developers to implement advanced authentication techniques ranging from biometrics to behavioral profiling. As the risk of cyber attacks and hacks increase, companies need a more effective way of preventing unauthorized access. I recently caught up with the Transmit Security CEO, Mickey Budai. This week, Mickey provides his top tips for legacy companies struggling with the management of in-house legacy systems.
The first one I call legacy. I'm seeing quite a few large enterprises struggling today with legacy in-house developed systems. These are systems that were developed 10 years ago, sometimes 20 years ago. They're extremely hard to maintain. They were developed using technologies that are no longer supported and require skills that are relatively hard to get today. Many of these legacy systems are core strategic systems and as such are connected to many other systems and processes in the organization. And replacing them is almost impossible. Data migration is a nightmare. Redoing all the interfaces is a nightmare. Even identifying the interfaces is very complex. On the other end, I'm seeing large enterprises today rushing into what I call do-it-yourself large-scale development projects of very similar systems. These projects are basically the legacy systems of the future. In terms of 10 years from now, CIOs are going to face the very same problem they are facing today with their legacy in-house developed systems. I think that as an enterprise, you need an extremely good reason to adopt a do-it-yourself over a buy decision. Your architects may tell you that they can build it, but no matter how much you try, you won't be able to estimate the total cost of the project over the next 10 years, nor the time it's going to take you to complete the task. My suggestion is to focus your development efforts on building interfaces to all your existing systems so you can more easily plug in your services. Don't focus your efforts on building the legacy of the future.
Tune in next week when Mickey discusses the value of abstraction layers. Gary Reiner, welcome to the Forum on World Class IT.
Thank you, Peter.
That's great. Great to speak with you this morning. Gary, I thought we'd begin with your current role. You are an operating partner and part of the General Atlantic's resources group. And I wonder if you could just take a moment and talk about your purview in that role.
Sure. My responsibility is to look at technology companies where technology is the strategy and to become an advocate internally for partnering with them, and then in many cases, staying involved if we do partner with them, join the board and try to help them grow. We are a growth-oriented company, private equity firm, and so we, you know, that is our mantra, and so that's what I try to do, is help them grow faster than they otherwise would.
And are there certain segments of technology that particularly interest you, or are there areas that you focus on in particular?
The areas I have focused on have been mostly technology for large enterprises. Having been a buyer of technology for a large enterprise, I think people think it's a pretty good fit. So that's how that works out.
Yeah, and your current affiliations include Box and Mu Sigma, Turbonomic, Seismic. You've been in the past on the board of companies like Genpact and Appirio and SnapAV. So some big names and very prominent growth stories in each of these cases. You also are currently on the board of Hewlett-Packard and Citigroup. And I'd be interested...
The enterprise side of Hewlett-Packard.
Exactly.
Split up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm curious, obviously, the board experiences in a HP or a Citigroup would be very different from the board experience at a Turbonomic, for instance, very different places that they are in their growth cycles. And I'm curious if you could compare sort of your board experience across the wide array or range of organizations that you advise on a regular basis, and maybe what you draw from one to serve the other, obviously where appropriate.
Sure. And you know, I think every board member will have a different answer for that question. For each of those things, based on whatever they bring to the party, and also whatever the company in fact needs. So as you say, the companies that we've invested in at GA are growth-oriented companies, and so it's all about helping them grow faster than they otherwise would. And so the role I play is kind of making sure that they're able to meet with all of the relevant people to help get new customers. And then also really, in most cases, what I'm focused on is customer success, is making sure that when they're in a, when they have penetrated a customer, to make sure that the customer is as delighted as they can be, on the basis that the best salesperson for a company is a satisfied customer, as a reference. That's what I try to focus on. Whether I'm successful or not, who knows, but that's what I try to focus on with just about every one of the companies I get involved with at GA. With Citi, the big challenge for all the big banks is migrating from having been completely focused on compliance and regulatory adherence to now focusing on competitive advantage and things like productivity, and so trying to help really kind of move the company to be more focused on that. And with HPE, it's more of having been one of the biggest buyers of HPE's equipment in the past, just just, I guess if there's one particular focus I have, it's making sure that the solutions that they're coming up with are appropriate for what a large buyer of technology would be looking for, but also to make sure that we are monitoring what's going on competitively, both on-prem as also in public cloud.
That's very interesting. And you mentioned earlier, understandably, your focus at GA is on the enterprise space. And no doubt, you already mentioned that you have past experience as a buyer. I want to get to that in a moment. And naturally, also, your experience with companies like HPE and Citigroup provide you a lens into, you know, what the technology groups within those organizations are thinking, buying, you know, how they are evolving. And I'm sure, no doubt, that also leavens your own thought process as to, you know, what trends have legs, what organizations might have better opportunities and so forth. I wonder, are there other ways in which you keep your finger on the pulse of enterprise buying? And as you look to connect the dots between a company either you're about to invest in or already have, what direction they might take as a result of a broader set of perspectives you might gain from the research you're doing on the enterprise side?
It's a good question. You know, the GE was a very large company and with a lot of talent. And as a result, a lot of the talent as GE has morphed has moved on to other enterprises. And we've all stayed friends. And we talk a lot about what's going on in the world of technology. So that's one way of doing it. But then also, you know, when you're on the board of a company like HP, you see a lot in terms of what's going on in the world of technology. As they're selling to large enterprises. So you see it from a supplier's point of view. And then frankly, from Citigroup, it's one of the largest buyers of technology in the world. And so see from that perspective in terms of the decisions that the company's making on technology there as well.
Yeah, makes sense. So as you alluded to, you were once the chief information officer of General Electric, after roles as a partner in BCG, post-business school. Having done some business development at GE as well before rising to the role of CIO. And I must say, at the time in which you were a CIO, your purview then, even as compared to CIOs today, was quite broad and expansive. And in many ways, I imagine, representative of the breadth of experiences you had both in business school as a consultant, engaging with and advising a variety of technology businesses. This included M&A, sourcing, IT, operations. You were very much involved in the Six Sigma efforts at GE. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your own kind of thought process of the role of CIO. You had your own experience, of course. You now, through as we've mentioned in multiple portions of the conversation, have reason to continue to be in touch with CIOs who are the would-be or existing buyers of companies that you're affiliated with. And I wonder if you can talk a bit about the evolution of that role from where you stand.
You know, it's evolved a lot. You know, I'd say when I first became CIO, it was very much about taking cost out. It was very much one of how do we get the same amount done with less. And as a result, you know, the big migrations then were offshoring to India, where GE did upwards of $700 million of buy from Indian firms in India in the 2000s. It was, you know, frankly, using our scale to negotiate as hard as possible. And the world's changed where, you know, I mean, the famous phrase of software's eating the world, large companies are now finding that the single most important strategic thing they can do is develop software well. And it's rare that you'll find a company where building great software is not going to be a core competence of theirs. And the role of the CIO can play a huge, role in making that happen. And so what's changed is that whereas previously it was about implementing package software and getting it maintained as inexpensively as possible and building bespoke software as inexpensively as possible, now it's building it as well and as fast as possible. And that changes a lot of things. Offshoring now makes less sense. Onshoring and having your own captive capability can make a whole lot of sense. And finding new ways to develop software really quickly is I think, going to become one of the core value adds of a CIO going forward. There's a lot of things going on that are going to make that possible. Obviously, there's no genius in what I'm about to say. The PaaS layer of public clouds are incredibly inviting as a way to accelerate product development for developers, specifically focused on DevOps and ways in which they can develop software faster. There's no code, low code, and all those things that are allowing companies to develop software much faster. There's a lot of migration, obviously, to machine learning, and there are terrific companies out there that allow you to kind of throw their solution at your big data, and it can actually figure out the right algorithms, and based on the right algorithms, can actually build applications for you in real time. So what would have taken 2 years before, now it can take a month. And so there's all sorts of things out there that were not there, certainly 20 years ago, that are making the job, frankly, the CIO, much more interesting than it ever was.
That's very, very interesting indeed. And I'm wondering, you know, what one of the challenges that CIOs of companies of older and larger organizations is in some ways mirroring the advantages that the startups have. And again, I think you're probably somebody who has a wealth of perspective on this from having a foot in both worlds currently and in the past. What I'm referring to, and you've alluded to some of it as well, obviously a company that is, you know, 5 years old, 10 years old, that very recently they had the blank slate in terms of determining people practices, processes, technologies that they would use. And so there's no legacy. There's nothing to be updated at that point or upgraded. There's no technical debt, so to say, that needs to be retired. Obviously, all of that can gather fairly quickly, even in an organization that's only 5 or 10 years old. So I don't mean to say that the startups aren't immune to those very same issues, but an organization that's 50 years old or 100 years old, that transformation actually can be quite a challenge. And I wonder from where you sit, as somebody who has a foot in the startup world, a foot in a wealth of experience in more traditional older line organizations as well, what you garnered in terms of insights in comparing how and what makes some of these smaller, more nimble, more recently created, and therefore more recently advantaged from that tabula rasa perspective set of companies compared to organizations that do need to, in fact, transform in order to compete with them?
It's a great question. I mean, I think the newer companies would never think of owning their own data center. Right. They were born on the public cloud. They were born using SaaS and are quite happy there. So, it's not much legacy, because if they decide they want to change from one SaaS solution to another, they just change, and they just got to make sure their data can migrate. So it's much easier from that point of view as a new company. As an old company, everyone knows they have to change. The question is how you do it economically within the budget that you have. There are companies out there that you can leverage that can take your old software and if quote-unquote refactor it so that it runs on public cloud, if that's what you want to do. There's obviously lots of ways in which you can migrate from a capital intensive to an operating intensive expense management by migrating from your existing legacy applications to SaaS. And then there, as I said, there's lots of ways in which you can kind of, very quickly develop applications that replace your legacy using the PaaS layer and using low code, no code.
Yes, interesting.
But it's hard. I mean, it's hard to do all that while you're still trying to meet your quarterly budgets, and that's the skill of a great CIO that can do that.
Yeah, exactly. Of keeping the ship afloat, making sure that it's going in the right direction, and yet still making some what might be time-consuming, laborious, expensive, and not without risk, sorts of changes along the way as well.
As I say, changing the tires while the car's running.
Can I ask you, Gary, as you look to the future, say two or 3 years in the future, what are some tech trends that are particularly exciting you? What are some areas that you are becoming personally invested in, or where you are educating yourself or speaking with smart people on the topic? What are some things that are making their way onto your investment roadmap?
Sure. There's a couple technologies out there that are actually making on-prem almost as economic, in fact, in many cases, as economic as public cloud, and which is allowing CIOs who don't really want to move to the public cloud
to kind of leverage those technologies, things that allow you to get much higher capacity utilization on your on-prem, while at the same time, in fact, improving performance. There are some really smart software out there that allows you to do that. So that's very interesting. One thing, obviously, everything in machine learning is very interesting. And what's really hard about the machine learning piece is the lack of data scientists out there that are allowing large companies to really take advantage of the kind of data that they have. And so any kind of software that allows you to take advantage of your large data and take advantage of machine learning algorithms without having to hire all of the data scientists is a very, very compelling capability.
That's great. Gary Reiner, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT, expressing your perspectives. It's been a great conversation.
Terrific, Peter. Great to talk to you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Bill Rue, the Senior Vice President and Chief Digital Officer of General Electric and the CEO of GE Digital. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.